Sometimes in life, you have to hold your hands up and admit you're well beaten and there wasn't much you could do about it. Other times, there really is no sucks excuse. And on that note, welcome to the Tarleton Podcast, episode 285. I'm your host, Mark Mayo, for the show that is reviewing Reading's 2-1 defeat to 6th tier Kidderminster in the third round of the FA Cup. I could just end the show there, to be honest, couldn't I, really? Fortunately, we've got a couple of the finest Reading minds to discuss what on earth went on at Agra on Saturday. Simeon Pickup, the editor of the Tarlest End, how are you, mate?
Absolutely miserable, to be honest. I was outright angry after the game yesterday. It was the first time in ages, if ever, that I've been physically angry. You know, when you get that feeling inside yourself, you're kind of like bubbling with rage. I felt like that after the game, and usually kind of after a match, I'd simmer down a bit, I'd mellow, and I'd start to think about things a bit more kind of objectively. But today I'm just miserable, to be honest, not just for the game itself, but what it seems to say about the club much more broadly. And I'm sure we'll come on to that, but it's been a miserable 24 hours or so.
Yeah, it's actually, 24 hours is a pretty good way of putting it, because as we record this now, exactly 24 hours ago, Reading were 1-0 up at half time and everything seemed like it might have been just about something we could deal with. Also on the show this week, Adam Jones, assistant editor of Tyler Sent. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, not fantastic. Kind of same as Sim, really. I mean, it's one of those where you want to write something, but then you're absolutely kind of speechless at the same time. But yeah, absolutely miserable. But let's get into it.
Yeah, immediately after the final whistle, I tweeted, I said, there's not much I can say about that because it spoke for itself, didn't it? But a teeny bit of perspective has come in. Certainly our feelings have probably had a chance to settle in and bed in a little bit the day after. So we'll get into that in just a second. Beforehand, as always, big thanks to our sponsors, ZCZ Films, Patreon subscribers as well. And probably the final time, a nod towards the survey on the podcast or on the Tarleton website, of the state of Reading FC. Probably a really good time to go do that if you want to go and have your say on as a fan as to the direction of the club and all sorts. That's on the Tarleton website, as is the fanzine we did just before Christmas, the 150th anniversary fanzine. All of us got involved in that at Tarleton and a few other guys as well. Really good piece of work, which I'd thoroughly recommend. Completely takes you away from the current situation as well, which is not too bad a thing, I'm sure. So some nods towards that. And then, go on then. Let's do the recap.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
So, in reality, I don't think any Reading fan expected this to be a 7-0 stroll. And I think also that is kind of a little bit of a disrespect to Kidderminster and a little bit of a disrespect to the FA Cup third round. No team, apart from teams like Brentford did have a pretty easy day, but generally looking across the third round, no team absolutely cruised it. Even like Tottenham at home to Morecambe, it's just how it goes. It's not going to be a 7-0 stroll that Reading expected to do. But Sim, at the game, obviously, Reading did go 1-0 up, but were there kind of any early warning signs that this was going to be quite as bad as it did turn out to be?
I guess looking at the first half, it felt largely pretty comfortable. I mean, Reading weren't particularly good and you could tell there were a lot more gears to go up through. And yes, we got the goal. Kidderminster had a couple of openings. They seemed to be quite tentative openings. I mean, maybe it was, say, getting a free kick in and around the area, a ball over the top that kind of led to a faint penalty shout. But it felt very kind of remote, really. And it felt very much like the kind of game where Reading just needed to get a bit of quality, get a goal, maybe get another goal, and we'd kill it off. And yes, there was a lot of kind of hype from the home fans, obviously, as you can imagine it being such a big occasion, but a fairly competent, well-organized, disciplined side should have been able to see that off. I guess it's particularly damning looking at the second half, just how we collapsed, conceding those two really sloppy, really poor goals in the second half. It felt a lot like the Derby game, to be honest. It wasn't necessarily a case of us being absolutely bossed and outplayed and everything, particularly with the goals, which were very scrappy. But there was that sense of inevitability growing through the second half with the amount of pressure we put ourselves under, and just, again, depressingly avoidable.
All the goals, Adam, I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? Because obviously this result is a terrible result for the club. But fundamentally, if the goalkeeper does his job on both goals, they don't go in. And I suppose that's the difficult thing, is that you can take the goals in isolation and say, yeah, Raphael's obviously not done a good job for either. But as Sim says, it's not like we were bossing the game and completely miles clear, was it? These two goals, you know, would you say that there was any kind of, is there anything against or anything to save Raphael for them? Or ultimately, they're just goalkeeper errors, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, that's effectively what they were. I mean, especially the first one that's kind of gone under him. But I have to say, I mean, I think they deserve those two goals, to be honest with you. I thought they showed a lot more intent going forward. They showed quite a bit more urgency, a bit more quality, actually, considering, you know, how far apart we are. I think it was something like 79 places in the English football pyramid that we were apart. And honestly, you couldn't tell yesterday. You know, it was like, you know, two kind of teams in the same league. And I know that, you know, we had some youngsters out there, but we should have done a better job than we did, really. And I think for me that even the first half for me was just as much of an insult as the second half. Of course, we collapsed in the second half and the goals were really poor. I mean, some would argue that the second shouldn't have counted, but I think that's the way it goes sometimes. And to be honest, that would have papered over the cracks had it been ruled out. So yeah, I mean, Raphael has to take a lot of collective responsibility, for that, but there's also got to be collective responsibility as well, because I thought some of the senior pros out there especially were really poor. Obviously, some of the youngsters were a little bit shaky, you know, Holzman was a tiny bit, but, you know, he could hold his head up, I think, after that match, you know, being thrown straight in by Paulo in the starting lineup for his first game. I think that was quite harsh, really, to throw him in there in what was a really high pressure game. But yeah, some of the senior pros, I mean, you know, Danny Drinkwater was really poor, you know, ex-England international, didn't step up to the plate. I thought it was a bit of a disaster to play George Puskás up front on his own. He was really, didn't really have any sort of effect. But yeah, in terms of the goals, you know, you've got to say Raphael has got to be doing a lot better there. And especially, you know, I know that it's hard because he hasn't played that much recently, and he was actually, you know, reasonably promising in the first half, but for me he had to do better on those two. And you know, I can't see him getting back in the starting lineup anytime soon, put it that way.
No, I mean, it's an awful time for the club in the sense of Raphael's, it was because they're trying to sell him at the moment, and who's gonna you know, so I don't think anyone was ever going to pay a fee for him, but who's going to pay his wages, having watched that as his most recent performance? Really do kind of feel that, you know, ideally that would be his last game for the club and we kind of move on and forget it and just say, you know, we had some good times and that's that. But yeah, it doesn't feel like anything that's going to necessarily resolve itself quickly. Well, I'll come on to the team a bit later, but what I wanted to ask you guys as well is that, for, you know, ultimately, if you break this game down into kind of how it goes along, and Reading started poorly, I can live with that. You can accept that young players, that maybe not everyone's played with each other, etc. The first half being the way it went, I don't think, yeah, I can live with it. The second half, having the equaliser go in, again, I can probably just about live with it. You can accept these things happen. And even Reading being a bit poor before the equaliser, again, it's not catastrophic for me. But typically in these sort of games, when there's a team that's obviously of more quality, when push comes to shove and they let the equaliser in or something like that, they just turn it on and they go and get the other goal and they say, ah, there you go, that's why we're better than you. We'll just go and score as we fancy. We'll just take control of the game and that'll be that. And Sim, how did Reading react to the leveller? Because that's the killer point for me. If they reacted to the leveller badly and continued to collapse and no one was able to actually say, guys, we're the better team here and just deal with it and go and grind out the win somehow, that, I think, is the most damning point for me.
You know, I don't think we did react to the leveller at all, to be honest, or even the winner. It felt increasingly in the second half as this Kidderminster with the side in the ascendancy. It wasn't just they happened to nick two goals. They were often pinning Reading back. Reading were too deep. And as you say, we needed to react to that. And I'm looking at players like, I don't want to scapegoat people because it's easy to just say, oh, such and such a player should have done better. But I'm looking at someone like Tom Dele-Bashiru, who is capable of taking the game by the scruff of the neck. Maybe it's getting on the ball and driving infield or something like that, having a shot. Femi Aziz, to a lesser extent, I know he's younger, but he's still got more quality with respect than anyone Kidderminster had. I want players to properly take charge in a circumstance like that. And what we actually saw was Reading struggling to even get into the final third, really, or to impose any kind of control with possession. It was a young side. It was rocked by Araruna going off. That must have shaken them mentally as well, to be fair. You got players in there like Holzman and Stickland, Osorio Kamara, who are kind of being asked to do a lot, really. They're being asked to be essentially the backbone of a side that is going to go up and try and get a result against Kidderminster. And yes, they may be talented youngsters, but physically they're not able to necessarily hold their own against established pros who are a lot bigger than them, basically. And it did feel like we were getting bullied. But in circumstances like that, you want your experienced players to just say, right, this is what we're going to do in this circumstance. This is how we get back into the game. Let's calm things down. And I didn't see that from them. And I know Drinkwater didn't get the final portion of the game, but for the bit he was on the match, was in the match, with the exception of the ball over for Puskas's goal, he didn't really take charge. He didn't set the tempo or anything like that. And it's worrying, basically.
Yeah, that's the... It just runs through the entire team, I think. And it's worth pointing out, obviously, the team that did play, for those who kind of missed it or forgot, Bristow in at left-back, Holzman centre-back alongside Tom Holmes, who's captain. Tetek was at right-back, with Araruna coming on at half-time and then having to come off, taken off on a stretcher, which meant there was a long old injury time. And yeah, that, I mean, just taking out the context of the game, for Araruna, that's absolutely sickening. And Jonathan Lowe, the Get Reading reporter, saying that he was walking away from the ground on crutches, from obviously such a long time he's been away to come back and look like that could be a season over or something like that. We obviously don't know yet. Unsurprisingly, there's been nothing coming out from the club in particular in the last 24 hours, so we don't know any more on that, but doesn't look good. Claudio Osorio, the academy midfielder, in Mamadi Kamara at right wing, but otherwise, you know, Halilovic, Dele-Bashiri, Puskas, Drinkwater, all senior pros. Rinomota, Lauren, Aziz and Stickland came off the bench as well, with Jamari Clark not brought on along with Senga. So really, I think the way I look at this team, and it's hard to fall into to work out exactly what Paunovic is thinking in terms of the FA Cup. He might see it's completely irrelevant. I don't want to fall into the stereotype of saying because he's not English or British that it's more likely to be irrelevant to him, because, you know, it certainly doesn't always work out that way. But ultimately, he has to put a team out that's going to win that game. And if he didn't think that team was good enough to beat a sixth-tier side, then he shouldn't have played them. And if they were good enough to beat them, then why didn't he make them beat them? And this is the thing for me, Adam, that if you're going to play that team, you have to do that thinking that it is good enough. And ultimately, I think everyone would have looked at that team and said it was good enough to win.
100%. I think for me, putting Tetek at right back, I know that he's been there before, Dejan Tetek, and he's performed all right. But, you know, I think that for me was a good enough team to go out and get a result. I think starting, as I said, I mentioned it before, starting Holzman at centre-back, I thought was a bit harsh, perhaps, in such a high-pressure game. So I thought that wasn't exactly the best decision. But you look at, you know, some of the established pros there, you know, Tom Holmes is becoming just that now after, you know, a breakthrough season last season. He's become one of the first names on the team sheet. As you mentioned, Danny Drinkwater as well, who should have really taken control of that game as an ex-England international or former Premier League winner, and just didn't do so. And others as well that have got to step up to the plate and kind of support the younger players. You know, some people were saying before the match that it was a stronger lineup than they thought it would have been. I thought it was kind of the right mix, perhaps, of youth and experience, maybe one or two more senior pros in there. But we should have had enough, really, to get the job done. And unfortunately, we didn't in the end. But I think for me, it was less about the selection from Paolo, because I didn't really have many too many qualms with that, considering that he wanted to rest players. And I do understand that. I know that other people didn't really. They thought that he should have built fitness up. But I kind of understood that. I think for me, it was a style of play which was the biggest insult, really, because the players out there just didn't know what to do. It just looked like they'd been, rounded up, as strangers and put on the pitch, because there was nothing there, really. No kind of style of play, no real philosophy, no way of playing, no urgency going up the pitch. And I guess you can kind of understand a slow start because, they've rarely kind of played perhaps with each other before that lineup. But still, it was just, it felt like he put them out there with an incoherent plan because there was just nothing there. And I think for me, that was my biggest kind of peeve with it, because it was just unacceptable, really, the lack of planning, really, that happened. I mean, perhaps that there wasn't really much of a plan, or that it wasn't clear. Obviously, you sent them out there with a plan, but it just didn't seem to be clear to them.
Yeah, well, we'll go into the mailbag in a second, because there's lots of talk of Pavlovic and everything. So we'll save that, the talk for the future, for the next section of the show. Final point that I'll make, that it wasn't nice seeing the stuff going on with the fans at the end of the game. Obviously, the anger at the result is fair enough, and, Kidderminster fans goading the away end isn't good to see. Obviously, there was not enough policing. Whatever situation there was with that wasn't good enough, that the authorities should have done better with that. But at the same point, as Reading fans, we have to hold ourselves to a higher standard, I think, in terms of how we deal with these sorts of things. And I think Tom Holmes put on Instagram that people were effectively, sounded like Reading fans, he was suggesting, were effectively like trying to swing for his family, who were there obviously trying to, probably be a bit more supportive of the team than someone else. Obviously not something that we've seen, but doesn't sound good. And I just think, as I say, holding ourselves to high standards is absolutely important for these sorts of things. We're Reading at the end of the day. We're not a club that has a history of violence or hooliganism, etc. I'm not sure these things are released so much these days, but certainly I've not seen them in the last few months. But typically, when the number of arrests get announced for the whole year, Reading are always, or the Milesi stadium is always right at the bottom of these lists, and that's how it absolutely should be. And we're fundamentally better than what we saw the scenes at the end of the game on Saturday. So absolutely need to make that clear, I think, because we ourselves need to do that, and on social media and everything. And it is a wider problem in the game at the moment. I think you watch a lot of games on TV these days. There's certainly been a rise in not very nice incidents amongst fans, lobbing bottles, etc., all those kinds of things onto the pitch has, I think, in an English game, gone up in terms of instances and incidents in the last 3-4 years. Hopefully it's something that, isn't going to be a growing trend. But if it's going to keep going, then we're going to see some consequences, and it's not going to be good for us. And we as Reading fans, I think that's just the only thing I can say about it, is hold ourselves to a higher standard than what we've seen some other teams do. The last thing then, Belka Paunovic, we usually take the club's YouTube little clip to show you what Paunovic said after the game. I can't find it, funnily enough. I'm not sure they put it online. I've not seen anything online for the YouTube or the Twitter, in fact, since the game. So I'll just read out a little bit. Not everything, stuff I agree with, so I'll let you make your own decisions about that. Paunovic saying this is a bad experience, an important experience, but a bad experience, something every player experiences in their career. We knew Kidderminster, a well-organised team, had quality in their front four. Nothing was unexpected. First half, we had control and the lead, but the second half was not good from an inexperienced team. It's a horrible night, you're saying, just kind of flicking through here. Saying he doesn't regret the team selection, which, as we kind of gone through, is maybe fair enough. He's saying January's going to be tough. We're still not there, still not in good shape, but we have courage and determination to fight forwards. In terms of whether he's going to be in charge for the Fulham game on Tuesday, he says, I'm working, as it will be definitely. This is football. Anything can happen. I always work giving my best and doing the best possible preparation. Then whenever whatever happens, happens. We're going to keep doing what we are doing with what we have. Well, I think it's probably time to go into the mailbag then and hear what you think after the game.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
So Sean Burgess starting us off, the ever droll tweet. Right, let's get out of the way and address the elephant in the room. What are we going to do about England's shambolic batting lineup? Yes, very good, Sean. Moving on, Benjamin Vickers saying, did Puskás get in Dele Bashir's way for the first chance? Was Puskás offside for his goal? He's also saying about Raphael, which we've already discussed. In terms of the offside goal, I mean, he kind of was, really. It's fundamental. In fact, if you had VAR, probably wouldn't have stood. Scottish poet then, this is obviously what we've got to get onto now, saying, have the players stopped playing for the manager? Do we have any leaders? Sim, the situation with Pavlovic and his job is something we have to discuss. For, you know, starting from your opinions on it just generally, but starting from what Scottish poet said, do you think the players have stopped playing for him?
It's hard to tell, really. I mean, to be fair to Pano, he's made some points which may have some merit to them in terms of fitness, and when there is probably such a big issue with fitness, general kind of injuries and the lasting COVID situation and things like that, it can be difficult to work out what is players being tired and what is players not being bothered. So it's tricky to know where to draw the line between the two, but given all of that, what I really wanted to see, as I said earlier, I wanted to see some kind of fight back late on in the game, some kind of real sense that we're trying to get back into it. And look, it might not have worked. We might have, say, ploughed forward, piled on the pressure and then conceded a third or something like that, which obviously would have been even worse. But you want to see that sense of fight. And maybe it's because he's lost the players. I'm not sure, really. I really can't tell. And that may be kind of me kind of, it looked like me kind of defending him a little bit. But a while ago, I was thinking there's no way that he's lost the players. Because you go back to, say, the Swansea game and the Fulham game, the Birmingham City game as well. We've been capable of some really dogged performances, digging in and really kind of even coming back from a goal behind or something. We managed to get better at doing that. But fast forward to now, and obviously the Derby game as well, the nature of the West Brom match not all that long ago, it feels a little bit like he's losing him. I can't say for sure, but it's certainly a possibility.
Do you sack him?
It doesn't give me any pleasure, but I would do it at the minute. I mean, the way I see it, there's so many problems at the club, but Pavlovic isn't the answer. And look, that it makes me sad to say that, because I really like him. I respect him. I think he's a guy who buys into the club and he genuinely respects the club. But there's just not enough coming from him in terms of, well, any real sense that he's going to turn things around. And look, the injury problem is a massive mitigating circumstance. It's been horrible for the entire season. And I had a look into the stats behind it. It's been consistently awful pretty much the entire campaign. But you've got to think, is this the manager that we want in the dugout when players come back from injury? Are things definitely going to improve when players come back? Or are we going to have the same problems with, lack of fight and things like that? At the minute, just the risk that we're going to keep on spiraling down is too high. Look, maybe he turns things around. Maybe it's possible. But at the minute, the risk is too high to not get rid of him.
I mean, Adam, same question for you, really. Do you think he should go?
I like him as a person. As Sim said, I think he does. He definitely buys into the club. Dealt, you know, a terrible, terrible hand, you know, from the powers above, I think. But at the moment, I think that he has got to go. I think yesterday was a cocktail, a complete, you know, disaster, really. It was a cocktail of his kind of style of play and the players out there. I think he's a bit too negative for me. I think we need to kind of, in this relegation battle, I think we need to impose ourselves on games. And I think we've got the, you know, the players to do that. Definitely the likes of Drinkwater, who can get on the ball. John Swift as well, one of the best midfielders in the league. Ajaria, who can do well. You know, we've definitely got the players there as well. Yeardon, even, you know, at fullback, obviously we won't have him because of the African Cup of Nations, but he'll return at some point. So yeah, we need to impose ourselves kind of and be on the front foot in games. And with Pauno, we don't do that. You know, we could do good against a Swansea that are going to, you know, dominate the ball and then we break forward. But when we're dominating possession and when we've actually got a foothold in the game, we don't seem to know, you know, what we want to do. And I think that has to come down to a style of play, because we seem to like counter-attacking, but we never kind of start on the front foot. And, you know, that's been the hallmark, really, of our most successful teams is, you know, under Cockerill and McDermott, is starting on the front foot straight away, you know, straight from the off. And, you know, the fact that we don't do that puts us at a disadvantage straight away. And, you know, sitting back as well, I think, you know, Derby kind of rammed home, really, the fact that we sit back far too much. So for me, he's got to go, I think. I think we need a new style of play. But, you know, it's not just him at fault, really, for the club's problems at the moment. There has to be, as I said earlier, collective responsibility.
Yeah, and we'll get on to that in a second. I think, from my personal opinion, you've got, we've had Lloyd Royal say, Panovic was really unlucky today, discuss, and behavioronomics saying was the second goal a foul on the keeper. I mean, it wasn't a foul on the keeper, that's just how it is. That's not even me being like defeatist and oh, woe is the club. It just wasn't a foul. And in that sense, was he unlucky? And this is the question that it's a really important point to think about, because we've always talked about the injuries and everything like that. And only last week I was kind of, you know, we had a question saying about was you'd have to be a magician to kind of make this Reading team a really competitive team and all that sort of stuff. But I think that I've always been willing to defend Paunovic for these, you know, for the West Brom game, for example, that I know a lot of fans are really unhappy about. I was defending, you know, look at the team that got put out. What can you do with that team? It's difficult. They had a bit of fight. They only lost by a goal. Even the Derby game, we went 2-0 up, goalkeeper error, things go against us and we draw. We should have won that game, but we didn't. Ultimately, all of the same things happened in those games that happened on Saturday. We were too negative, as Adam just said. There wasn't really much fight. The team just didn't look like they really knew each other, generally speaking. And those are all, you know, those are all things that Paunovic can change. And I'll defend that when it happens in a championship game, because you're playing good teams. But I can't defend that when it's happening against Kidderminster. And, it's, you know, forget respect and all this sort of stuff. They're in the sixth tier. They're not even in the National League. They're in the league below it. They're not even a conference team. And when you go to these places, you know exactly what's going to happen. You should know exactly how the game is going to pan out and all these sorts of things. And if you do ultimately give a team like that a sniff of producing the best result of their career, then they're going to do it. So that's, for me, is because Paunovic has allowed that to happen. And it wasn't like we were, you know, bossing the game and got unlucky or anything like that. We were just the worst team out of the two. And for that sort of performance, I don't think that he could keep his job much longer. We've kind of discussed before the podcast, we couldn't really agree on whether it's going to happen before Fulham, potentially. I'm not sure. For me, I kind of feel like it isn't going to happen, him going before Fulham. But I just can't defend these sorts of performances. And it fits a theme and a pattern that has been going on for too long now. And the question that Reading have to ask themselves isn't so much, is the FA Cup a priority? Because we always know it wasn't, really. But is Paunovic going to keep us in the league now? And in the last few weeks, and this caps it off, there is a huge question mark over that. For me personally, that was really crystallised over the weekend. A few more questions. Sam Richards saying, tin hat on, but I'm interested to know why the majority seem to go back to blaming Keir Drachman and the owners. I'm not sure how they can take any blame for the defeat yesterday. In my mind, the squad that's been put together, considering we could spend no money, is half decent. Gideon's also saying about a potential need for fans to take control of the club. I mean, the Talos then coup will be glorious. That's all I'm going to say about that. But I mean, Sim, I kind of agree with Sam. For me, there are lots of things going wrong with the club, but this defeat taken on its own, out of certain contexts, isn't really about them. This is just about a team being set up badly and not paying off.
Yeah, I mean, in isolation, this game isn't about Keir Drachman or the owner. It is very much Paunovic's failure, regardless of the players that he had or anything like that. The thing with a game like this is something that I find a little bit curious, actually. Games like this that are so fundamentally awful and they make you feel so bad, it's less about the actual game itself. It's about the reaction that it forces about the club as a whole. I mean, you go back to, say, the Huddersfield game when we lost 4-0. I mean, really, that was to a large extent about things like lack of signings, about bad organisation from set pieces and stuff like that. There are a lot of kind of footballing issues. But when you have such a bad game like that and it puts people in such a worried state about the club, basically, it is going to make them talk about things like, things like recruitment and things like longer term issues that far predate all of this. And it feels like people are essentially talking about the game as a symptom rather than an actual kind of thing that is necessarily directly representative of Kier or anything like that. But yeah,
I kind of feel like it, I do kind of get the vibe that it's a byproduct of everything that's gone on. But yeah, I mean, I don't know what you think, Adam. I do kind of think that as Sam said, the squad that we have built in the circumstances, this could be a hell of a lot worse.
Yes, I would agree that to a certain extent, but then you've got to argue as well, why is Dejan Tetek starting at right back? You know, the reason why we couldn't recruit, you know, more left backs and more right backs is because of the fact that we're under a major transfer embargo. So for me, this problem is systemic, and it did play a part in yesterday. I think Pano has to take, you know, 90% of the responsibility for yesterday. But I think yesterday it kind of just hammered home kind of the state that we're in at the moment as well, and letting players go, you know, at times, you know, letting the wrong players go and not letting others go at the right time. I mean, you have a look at the likes of Thierry Nevers and Oliver Pendlebury. I know I'm going on a bit of a tangent here, but those are two players that could have been involved, you know, yesterday. And I think they probably would have shone in that game. And the fact as well that we've got so many youngsters in there as well. And, you know, these aren't just 20-year-olds. You know, some of these are 17. And that's, you know, one of the reasons for that is because we had to get rid of, you know, most of our under-23s team. Whether that's because of financial issues, I don't know. But, you know, I have a feeling that it might be. So, for me, you know, you look at Dejan Tetek at right back and, you know, and some of the players on the pitch, and you're thinking they're not going to, you know, they wouldn't have started if we didn't have a transfer embargo in the summer. And that's because of our financial issues and our financial mismanagement. So, yeah, I mean, you know, Pano has to take 90% of it. But also did highlight, I think, the problem kind of with, you know, the people that are higher up than Paunovic. So, yeah, I think that plays a part as well.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because the final questions of the week, Paul saying, with the repercussions of FFP, it's priority to get the academy the best it can be, get Brian McDermott to run it. I don't think that's actually a bad chance, to be fair. Sean Mosby saying, or Graham Murty, actually, he's free. Sean Mosby saying, what parts of the club can we build around? What fixtures do we keep? It feels like every aspect of the club needs a huge amount of work. Probably not something I think we need to dwell on now, because I think we'll all agree that the academy is pretty important and certainly central to where we need to go as a club. I will only point out that Dom Higham scored the winner for Coventry on the weekend, a centre-back that came through the Reading Academy, didn't get a chance. Obviously had to go down to League Two and has come back up since then, but now is a, you know, fully bona fide championship defender in his prime. Probably would get near enough in the team now. And that, obviously, you know, as you said, Adam, in terms of letting players go at the right time and everything, it felt like certain corners of the footballing world discovered the man Michael Olise on the weekend. And I tweeted that it's distinctly painful to have all these people only discover a player like that and be like, oh, where did they get him? It's like, well, yeah, he came from us. we did that. Obviously, you know, he probably would have gone anyway in the summer and these sorts of things happen anyway, but might have got a bit more money for it. Had, you know, certain things been different, the club been better managed. These are the sort of things that you need. I think as a championship club, you need as many of these things to go right for you as possible. But ultimately, just, I'm not sure you can count on one hand how many Reading have got right in the last 3-4 years, and it all links up, and it obviously it does. These things do snowball and everything like that. They do contribute to the Kidderminster defeat, absolutely. What a percentage it does contribute, we can argue about all day. But let's move on then. Go into news bites, talk about what's going on around the club, and then yes, it is a big old match on Tuesday night to talk about as well.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by ZCZ Films. Remember, if you want to get involved in sponsoring the show, drop us an email to thetarlhurstend@gmail.com.
Right, so let's do some news bites. Under-23s and under-18s not been in action yet this year. It's actually tomorrow, the Monday, that the under-23s away to Sunderland. They are 11th in their league at the moment. The under-18s have Man United in the FA Cup, or FA Youth Cup, I should say, on the 13th. And the women's team, absolutely massive fair play to them, started the year with a victory at home to Leicester. That was Sunday afternoon. Natasha Dowie with the goal that has put Reading, but they're sixth in the WSL now, 2 points off fourth, 4 points off third even, and you know, not even that many miles away from Chelsea. Really good run of form they're on at the moment, having lost their first four league games of the season. They are now unbeaten in six, winning five of those. It is just looking like a really good run of form. Well, that said, they've got Arsenal away on Sunday the 16th, and they're top of the league. So, you know, a really good litmus test that'll be. That kickoffs at 2:30, by the way, Sunday the 16th of January. And yeah, it's going to be a pretty short news bites because there's not really been a huge amount of transfer news and anything to go through. But I was just going to make the point that there is a bit of a danger that at some point in the next couple of weeks, if the men's team continues to be a shambles, I probably will just dedicate a podcast to the women's team and throw the men's team into the news bites. So consider that a warning, lads. You're on notice.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Big match preview then. Fulham, January the 11th. This is it's a home game, the rearranged home game, meant to be the 29th of December. 8 p.m. kickoff at the Select Car Leasing Stadium. We've also then got Middlesbrough on the Saturday, 3 p.m. away from home. We won't focus too much on that because obviously a lot can change in the meantime. But this is a really big game for Reading now. I think we can probably approach it, previewing it from the point of view that not much is going to change Paunovic in or out over the next couple of days. I will say that Reading have won their last two against Fulham. Both of those were 2-1 wins at Craven Cottage. The last time Fulham came to Reading, Jose Gomez's Reading lost 4-1 in a defeat that really kind of, you know, pushed him towards the exit door. And I do wonder, Sim, whether we could be getting the same sort of result this time around.
Yeah, I can't quite remember the timeline, but I think that was his last home game right before an away game, what, maybe a matter of days later, something like that. And it's feeling a lot like it could be, if we get a hiding from Fulham, which may happen, may not do, it could be the kind of game that makes Dye think this isn't the guy to take us forward. That being said, it would be absolute classic Reading Football Club if we somehow managed to lose to Kidderminster and then beat Fulham. Look, it's all about the response. You can look at this and say, right, this has been so terrible, this has been so awful on Saturday, that we are going to be able to bounce back just by essentially responding to the shame, and players really wanting to go out there and, you know, prove they can do better against Fulham, and that they're not going to kind of get drawn into a mess and they're able to respond. I doubt that's going to happen. And I'm, as much as I want to think we're going to get an unlikely win for in whatever fashion, I really do worry that it's just going to be a comfortable stroll for Fulham, basically.
Adam, what can we do to win this game? What can possibly be moved around? I mean, I did actually, funnily enough, for work, I had a semi-eye on Bristol City Fulham on the weekend, their FA Cup game, and they weren't great. I'd say Bristol City probably the best team for most of it. Fulham ultimately won. They have shown that they're not infallible recently. I don't think they've actually won in the Championship for, when was the last time they won? 20th of November. So they ain't looking great. So what can Reading do to turn things around here?
I mean, the win, although it's fantastic in the reverse fixture, was a lot to do with Fulham not being very clinical at that time. I know they also struggled against Leeds United. I don't know if it was in the the game prior to that or following the Reading match. But they were really kind of not very clinical at that time. So I think the result will be just about as kind of down to Fulham as it is us. I know that they haven't been in kind of the greatest form recently, but they're, you know, still up there. And they've still got a chance, really. And they've got motivation now to really kind of get themselves back in the promotion spots if they haven't already, because of, you know, Blackburn are on the rise with Brereton Diaz and those players. So, you know, they're going to have no shortage of motivation. For us, I think that we've got to go perhaps with experience and with players that have played with each other, you know, quite a lot. Obviously, you've got Andy Carroll in there who turned 33 a couple of days ago, so I'd start him definitely as well as a real threat and as kind of a real game changer for us. Really, it'll be interesting to see what's happening with the injuries. I don't know, you know, how long Halilovic is going to be out for, so that will be interesting to see what happens. The fullback situation's really kind of concerning for me, and it tells you a lot really when you're kind of asking me for positives and I'm going straight to the negatives. But I think for me, we've got to go with experience. I think the fact that a lot of those players who are probably going to start on kind of against Fulham haven't started against Kidderminster, I think that might work against us, because you're not exactly going to get a reaction, I don't think, you know, a major one. Considering some of those players weren't playing at the weekend, so that might work against us a little bit. But for me, I think it's going to be very much down to Fulham, I'm afraid. And, you know, we're just going to have to, you know, do what we can. I guess, you know, Paunovic's tactics in a way might work against Fulham, obviously sitting back a little bit and then, you know, going on the break. But I think for me, if we do go kind of ahead, perhaps early on, then it might work against us in the fact that we sit back too much. So maybe, I mean, for me, perhaps a more front foot performance, you know, might kind of galvanise the fans a bit more and kind of, you know, give them a bit more encouragement and something to shout about. So perhaps that's something that we need to do. But then again, you've got Fulham who can kind of, you know, exploit the spaces, you know, if we do start on the front foot. So it's going to be really difficult, actually, in fairness to Paolo, to kind of work out what approach that we go for. But I think it's about getting that happy medium about going forward and then kind of defending when we need to, because Mitrovic is going to be an absolute pain to deal with.
Yeah, I think it's a fair point that ultimately if Fulham do turn up and play their best, we're probably not going to get won't have a very good chance of getting a result almost no matter what. Looking at the fact that Ashcroft didn't play against Kidderminster, unless I'm missing an injury, suggests that he'll still be at right back for Fulham, which suggests that Holmes and Dan will be the centre backs, because Liam Moore, I presume, won't be ready in that case. Obviously, what happens at left back, whether Bristow stays in, or, you know, we shift things around, Josh Lauren will probably come back in. Rinnamotta was on the bench in return from injury, so there's half a chance he could start. Swift, Hoylett, Carroll should all come back into the team. But yeah, I think for Reading, this is just a case of, if Paunovic is still going to be in charge, I don't hold out a huge amount of hope that anything significant is going to change. Because even if we do go 1-0 up, then the chances of Fulham just coming back at us and sorting out a result that way, it will feel very difficult for fans inside the stadium, even if Reading are 1 or 2-0 up, to feel comfortable and, you know, really happy about it. There will always be that worry, at least for the next few weeks, if this is how things are going to continue. Let's round off the show then. Let's do some predictions. Obviously, the FA Cup game doesn't count towards the prediction league. As it stands at the moment, Wesley's top on 21, Ollie 18. Adam, you're 17 and third, so I'll throw to you first for prediction for the Fulham game.
For me, I think it's going to be a very Bournemouth at home type game. I think we might start brightly, but I think they might sucker punch us just before half time and then get another one kind of in the second half. So for me, it's going to be a 2-0 victory for Fulham, and I think Mitrovic might get a goal or two, because he was in very good form in the early stages of the season. He did have a drought recently. I guess, you know, a drought for him is a couple of games, and that's what it was. But I think it will be time for him to kind of get in amongst the goals again. So yeah, it's going to be 2-0 victory for Fulham, I'm afraid.
Yeah, Sim, I'll throw it to you before I go for myself.
You know, in the reverse fixture, I was, as far as I can remember, the only person in the prediction league that predicted a win. I was so proud of that. And I have a slight egotistical feeling that I might have done something to help us get the victory. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to repeat my prediction for the last game, 3-2 Reading, Reading 3 Fulham 2. Not because I think it's likely to happen, but on the basis that it might help absolutely anything for us to get a result on Tuesday. It's more likely to be a Fulham win, but my official prediction is going to be Reading 3 Fulham 2.
I'm going to go for a 3-0 Fulham win. Kind of in that Gomez sense I was talking about earlier, the kind of catastrophe. Certain times in football, you produce these results that surprise everyone, and you know, coupon busters and everything, and kind of show, oh yeah, you know, we were right to you know, not forfeit this game, but to have messed up the previous game to save this one, and everyone's, you know, semi hunky dory, if not a bit cheesed off. But there's also quite a lot of times it goes the other way, and it doesn't work, and catastrophes happen, and managers get sacked, and all sorts of things happen. So yeah, I'm going to go for a 3-0 Fulham win, I'm afraid. And that draws to an end this show. Huge thank you, as always, guys, for popping on. Adam, always a pleasure to have you on, mate.
Perfect. No, thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure. Perhaps not this week, but hopefully next week and in the weeks to come, hopefully we can talk about some better results.
Sim, likewise, as always a pleasure.
Cheers for having me and letting me kind of process what's been a horrible day, but there we go. As Adam said, hopefully on to some better things in the coming weeks.
Yeah, I think process is actually a really good note to end on, because I mean, there's half a chance that as we record this now, it's 4:45 on Sunday, half a chance that I close this laptop and then there's a news story comes out, the pound of which is gone in, you know, the next 3 hours. And that I still think that this is a podcast is a good chance to review the Kidderminster game without kind of, you know, we've not discussed like potential replacements or anything like that. We've focused on getting over what has been a really traumatic result for the club. Arguably, you know, when in the last 20, 30 years have we had a result like this? You could really think about whether this is kind of the worst result or perhaps the one that fits the theme of Reading's downfall in the last few years as fittingly as this one. So hopefully, as you say, the processing of this result has been able to be moved forward by us a little bit. We'll be back after the Middlesbrough game. Hopefully by then something will have turned up to make us happy. And this is the ultimate thing to end on, a bit of a positive note, I guess, because we ultimately want to be proved wrong by Paunovic. One of the things he said was that in a couple months we'll be having very different conversations. We want to be having those conversations. We want to be there for Reading having the good times. We want to be there for ultimately Paunovic pulling it out and making, you know, having the rabbit come out of the hat and us everyone cheering and celebrating goals and wins and everything like that. And this week, you know, it's football and it's Championship football. Fulham and Middlesbrough, it's very plausible that Reading's first 11 go and get 4 points out of this week. And we actually say that, you know, we're moving on and there is light at the end of the tunnel. Sadly, it doesn't feel like it right now, but there is always that chance. And we will always be there backing that chance. And we'll always be there shouting loudest, hoping that Reading can push those sort of results through. So that's the sort of note that we'll end on this week. Thank you for listening. Come on your arse. Smile, funny.